and welcome to Raising a Pro. I am Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. Can you believe it? This is the final show of the season. How did that happen? Okay. When I launched this show back in 2020, which was 500 years ago, I promised to bring you all unfiltered look at the lives of some of NFL's heavyweights through the eyes of those who know and love them best, their parents and loved ones, and sometimes even the players. And what a season this has been. We had the first virtual draft ever with Joey Burrow going number one overall to the Bengals. Rob and his mom talked about that experience, you know, going from Vegas to the living room. I have enjoyed every second of this, and I've learned so much from each and every one of my guests. So thank you to everyone who has taken their time to chat with me over this past season. And of course, thank you all for joining me on this journey every week by listening. Season one was so awesome that I had to go and do a wrap-up with a little selection of some of my favorite clips. But I didn't bet on how hard it would be to choose my favorites when there are so many amazing and hilarious yet heartfelt moments. So many great clips, so little time. It was so hard, but guess what? I did it because it had to get done. So, in no particular order, here are some of my favorite highlights. Let's kick it off with none other than this hilarious exchange between my girls, Audrey Garrett, mom to Cleveland Browns defensive end Miles Garrett, and Robin Burrow, Bengals starting quarterback Joey Burrow's mama. Robin was giving us an update on how Joey was doing after he sustained a devastating knee injury in week 11 against the Washington football team, which ended his season on the spot. Thank God Joey is doing much better now and will be back stronger than ever. But this exchange still has me cracking up.
Spirits are high and we're moving forward.
You know, let's go back to that day, though, because I remember when I saw that and my heart went out to you right away, because it's like, it's so funny because we were moms and, you know, this is rookie year. And the mom in me felt like Robin was like, y'all give me my baby back. If y'all going to act like, give me my son back. I told you, Joey, not to be playing this game. Boy, let's go home. We are going home. We're taking our ball and whatever's left of us and we're going home. Give me my baby back.
You know, I'm on the other side because I hit her baby. My baby hits her baby. So I always feel bad when Miles sacks a quarterback and he lays there for a minute, because Miles is a heavy dude. And I wouldn't want him putting his force of his weight on my baby. I'd be mad at it. I'd see Robin, we've never met, but I'd be hot. I don't even want to look at you. It's like, my baby hits your baby. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Robin, is there anything you want to say to Audrey Garrett? Because her son does, he goes after your boy. Tell her off right now.
And he went after him a few times this year, I remember, but that's okay.
I'm sorry. That's all I got is one mom to another. I'm sorry from the bottom of my heart.
No, Robin, I'm not letting you off the hook. What do you want to say to Audrey Garrett? You have her here. You tell her what's on your mind.
I represent all defensive moms. I represent all the defensive moms. Just lay it on me, because we punish your child. So lay it on me. I'll take it for all the defensive moms. Go ahead.
I'm not going to lie. I honestly think, hey, they've all chosen this for themselves. Joe, he wanted to be a quarterback, and it's the life he's chosen. So he better have swift feet and agile moves and get out of the way is what he needs to do. Because your boy is getting paid to do what he's doing. So that's the way it goes.
Oh, my God.
You chose this life, Joey. I will always love that. You chose this life. All our sons chose this life. Anyway, you can always count on Robin to give it to you straight and Miss Audrey to take things up a notch. No, Audrey Garrett stays at 100. Like I said, Miles Garrett on the field is his mama, fearless and ferocious. And while she was full of apologies on that day, Audrey Garrett had no apologies in her back pocket when she joined me on the show back in November 2020. And we got onto the subject of a certain Mr. Warren Sapp, who had been saying some slick things about her son when Miles was headed for the draft in 2017.
When he came out, you know, you got to love the media because everybody got an opinion. And one of the opinions I have to read is from not one of my favorite at all. Don't really care for him, but I'm sure his mama loves him and so does Jesus. Hall of Famer Warren Sapp said, I see a lazy kid that makes four plays a game. This is your number one guy. That's just one example of the shade and all of that stuff. But how did you guys, you know, you leaving Texas A&M, coming into the pros, how were you guys prepared to handle the media and all of the stuff and projections and antagonism? Because I don't call it analysis, because you antagonize, because most of what they do is antagonizing. So how were you guys able to handle that?
Girl, if the audience could only see my face, because you can. I'm going to visit this Warren Sapp thing one more time. Let me tell you something. Everybody's not going to like your kid coming out.
And that's okay.
And that's okay. And it's just the nature of the beast, whether they don't like him because they didn't go to his school or he didn't go to their school or he didn't get drafted to their team. I got you. But when you have the gall to sit there and attack lazy, is a character issue.
That's what I'm saying. It's not analysis. It's antagonizing.
Annie Apple, that's not the conversation that you want to have with me about Warren Sapp, because I'm going to take
umbrage. We go there. This is Raising a Pro. We go there. And when you come for our kids, you come for us.
Yeah, well, Warren need to leave me alone. One of his friends told me, I'm not going to mention his name either because I don't throw people under the bus. But he said, I told Warren not to say nothing else. I said, good. I said, because I'll lay off when he lay off. But him and Booger McFarland, yeah, I throw them too. Ungabba gabba juice. That's my version of cursing on the air. So don't come for my kid. Personally, you can critique his performance. You can critique, but character-wise, if you don't know him, don't speak on it. I promise you, Miles ain't got nothing for Booger and he ain't got nothing for Warren. So Warren needs to concern himself about them prostitutes and worry about what his kids are doing. Don't worry about mine. Mine is going to be just fine.
Try Jesus, but don't try Audrey Garrett's son, honey. Don't go there. Audrey is totally right. When our kids sign up to play professional football, unfortunately, that also means they open themselves up to criticism and scrutiny on a national level. And we don't mind that as parents. We just want it to be accurate, fair, and not so blatantly toxic. And as I've said many times before, our sons sign up to play the game they love, football. Fame is just a byproduct of that. And while I'm sure it has its advantages, it also has a lot of disadvantages and can be hard for these young men to get their head around. Which is why I loved it when Nick and Joey Bosa's mom, Cheryl Bosa, opened up to me about that very topic.
Sometimes I have to tell them, I'm like, it's okay to get accolades. You work hard. You happen to be the best, one of the best ever at something. How many people can say that? You know, that, oh, I'm the best, whatever, or, you know, whatever it may be. You know, the fact that he will go down as one of the best who ever played the game. And he just is so, like Joey's so adamant about, you know, I am not, like, why do people want my autograph? Why do people want to say hi to me? You know, he doesn't understand why people think he's better or whatever. You know, it's really funny. And I'm like, it's okay. It's okay to be famous, honey. It's all right.
And, you know, and that's the thing that, you know, when I think about Joey, when I think about Nick, and even the same with Eli, where the love of football was always the factor, the goal, right? Yeah. It wasn't about the money, yeah, or it definitely wasn't about the fame. All those are just residual, but they yeah, love the game, you know? And that's why, yeah, for a parent, when you come through, you know, when you have to deal with all the trappings and the stuff of fame, it's a lot of challenge because we know our sons didn't come into this for all of that. They just love to play this right game. So I think the hardest part sometimes is navigating all those things outside of football.
And I think there's a lot of parents out there that think, you know, they want to know the magic pill. What is it? What did you do? You know, what did they do? And, you know, you don't just get this because you want to be that. It's the dedication, what they put into this to get to where they are. People just can't get it. You don't wake up with this.
It takes hard work, a lot of hard work, to make it to the pros. And I know that we're all so proud of our sons for all the work that they've put in. But alongside all of that hard work, there's also a lot of risk in a high contact, violent sport such as football, where injuries are unfortunately part of the game. And the 2020 season saw an unprecedented amount of injuries on the field.
is a subject we spoke about very often. Back in September, New York Giants star running back Saquon Barkley suffered a season-ending knee injury in the Giants' second game of the season. He will undergo surgery on October 30th to repair a torn ACL, and we all are glad to hear that he is rehabbing well. His mom, Tanya Johnson, shared some incredible insights into the impact that injury can have on not just the body, but also the mind.
I mean, it's heartbreaking, you know what I mean? Because you don't really know, especially with Saquon, football is like, he's been playing football since he was five. To have something that may can actually like take your dream away from you, you just don't, you know, you up in the air, you really don't know. You know what I mean? And then you got to find out like how bad it is. And can you, is it something you can come back from? It's just, it's heartbreaking.
And like you said, people don't understand, number one, they're human. And it's not just the physical pain, but it's also the psychological pain, right? It's the mental, because in that moment, you are thinking, wow, what if I can't do what I've done since I was five years old again, right? So as a mom, because we mom, we can look at our sons, even if they won't tell us, we know how they're feeling. So how were you able to kind of get to him and kind of encourage him in that moment?
I feel that doing that, you have to be there physically. You have to be there mentally. We're their mothers, but we're also their doctors, the nurse, the psychiatrist.
Come on, tell it.
You know what I mean? You're the one who has to, I mean, everybody, you know, give their empathy. Everybody is, you know, sending their prayers, but the ones that it really matters the most from is your parents. You know what I mean? And when you know that you have them in your corner, and that's the only thing we really can do, is be in your corner and be there for them and just give them words of encouragement. Pray with them. Let them know that it's going to be okay no matter what the outcome, no matter what it is. It's going to be okay. Everything in life has a setback, and you'll get set back, but sometimes you get set back for a greater journey.
September 2020 also brought about the news that Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier was officially retiring from football. Ryan overcame incredible odds by recovering from a spinal injury that he sustained during a Monday night football game against the Bengals in December 2017. That hit left Ryan seemingly unable to move his legs, and he had to undergo spine stabilization surgery just days later. Ryan defied all expectations and learned how to walk again, and he even danced at his wedding. His mom, Shawn Shazier, never doubted her son's determination to get back on his feet.
But this was totally different. This is when you see your child laying there and can't move their feet, can't move their toes, don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, hoping that, okay, this is just temporary, as far as a couple days temporary or a couple hours temporary. Then it was like days turned into weeks. So this was like a totally different thing where we had to really, it was such a surreal where I can't even explain honestly how we were dealing with it and handling it. Where I know it was nothing but God was carrying us. That's the only way I can explain it. Because I got to the point where I just felt he was going to be okay. I didn't cry. It was a couple of times I have cried when maybe the nurse, the doctor may say something and I will walk out the room, go in the bathroom and come back and just say, we're going to be okay. We're going to get through this. And I honestly felt he was going to be okay. I never thought he would never walk again. I never thought that, even though the doctor says it's a possibility.
Well, his rehab was phenomenal because Ryan was very committed. I mean, he was positive about it. He worked. What was that whole rehab process like? And the first time you saw him on his feet?
The rehab process, it was something that you probably thought you were seeing in a movie, because he was so determined. He was so determined. He would tell them, I don't care what I need to do. We're going to do it. If I feel tired or you feel like, okay, you can take a rest, give me 10 minutes. But if I'm supposed to do it, we're going to get it done. He never let the part where, oh, Ryan Shazier is tired. Let's give Ryan Shazier a break. Oh, Mr. Shazier say he'll do it tomorrow. No. If he was scheduled to do it today, and if he was scheduled to do it for an hour, that's what we're going to do. And he had to learn how to do everything all over again.
From one strong mama to another, I'd like to move on now to my good friend, Sherry Shepherd, mom of New York Giants wide receiver Sterling Shepherd. Sherry's husband and Sterling's father, Derek Shepherd, was also a wide receiver and played in the NFL. Sadly, Derek died in 1999 at the age of 35 from a heart attack when Sterling was just 6 years old, leaving Sherry alone to raise three young children. But it was seeing Derek's experience after playing in the league that helped her guide Sterling when he was turning pro to make sure Sterling knew better and did better.
I think it'd be different with Sterling because I've experienced it once.
Okay.
And so I think his mind is different than Derek's. Okay. Derek just hadn't thought about it, right? And hadn't even finished school. So he had to go back and finish 12 hours. And I made sure that Sterling finished school in 3.5 years so that when he graduated mid-year, he could spend the last semester preparing for the combine and he wouldn't have to ever worry about going back to school. I thought that was key. And Derek, he was in a different position from Sterling. And so once he got a goal in mind and he thought coaching is it, then he went after it and he pursued it. But the money is the biggest transition. Yeah. I mean, if you play professional ball and you're used to spending at one level and then your income stops suddenly,
drastically,
and you have to transition. Yeah, your income stopped and your expenses are at one level. So I could see it coming and I thought I have to start working. And so I told him when I married him, like, I didn't go to college to live off you. I mean, I'm a professional. I want to be in corporate America. So I started working the year before he stopped working. And that was helpful, you know, just to have somebody with benefits and everything else, because they didn't offer benefits like they do now. They
back in the day, they just gave you some Robitussin and a Band-Aid when you retired.
And it's like,
put some tussin on it.
Yeah, if you figure it out, you know. And so that, I think, helped smooth the transition is the fact that I was there and I was married to him. And so I did have benefits and he had to go back to school.
Becoming a widow at age 32 with three small children wasn't easy, but Sherry did it. I appreciated her honesty and vulnerability. Fans see the fame of the game, but it's really the families that keep the players going. Good, supportive, loving families. Coming together as a family was what helped Sabrina Greenlee, mom of Arizona Cardinals wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, survive a brutal domestic attack that left her for dead. Sabrina Greenlee joined me on the show back in November 2020, and what an episode it was. If you haven't heard her story, I suggest you go back and have a listen, as she is incredibly inspirational. Sabrina was widowed at the age of 23 after her husband and DeAndre's father, Steve, died in a car accident. Like Sherry, Sabrina was left to raise DeAndre and his two older siblings on her own. Despite the tragedy, we shared a smile together when Sabrina revealed how she managed to get DeAndre back into playing football when it looked like he had lost his love for the game.
He decided his ninth grade year that he wasn't going to play football anymore. He said, I'm done. I want to play basketball. That's where I want to go. So this is me coming up with all of these things as a mother. So I remember, you know, his father passed away when he was only 6 months old. So he was determined not to play this year. So the coach came in and he begged DeAndre. Now, mind you, the head coach came in the house. DeAndre's laying in the bed. I hear this grown man in there pleading with him to play. So I'm thinking, okay, what can I do? He is not going to play. So I go in there after the coach leaves. And so I tell DeAndre, I said, I had a vision last night. Your father came to me and he told me that you need to play. I was totally fabricating everything, but I was trying to do everything I can to get this kid to play. So he would not play. So he went out. He really didn't play that year. So he went out his 10th grade year. His punishment for not playing previously the year before was they put him at wide receiver. So he was really mad and he decided he was going to go out there and to make everybody mad, he was going to go out here and just like catch every ball and be mad and show them that he didn't care that they didn't put him at quarterback.
Wow.
Like he excelled at being a receiver. He played both positions that year. He got 14 interceptions in 1 year as a corner and he got like tremendous amount of receptions as a wide receiver. So that's how he became a wide receiver.
As parents, all we can do is support our kids. That's the best thing we can do. Support them, encourage them, and be there for them when things get tough and they need a shoulder to lean on or cry on. which is exactly what Michael or Martellus Bennett's mother, Penny Bennett, described to me when she opened up about what an emotional time Michael's draft day was back in 2001.
The following year, Michael decides to come out. Oh my goodness. So we spent we kind of did the same thing, small little setup. You know, we were actually at home, just locked down, watching the draft. First round, second round, we're like, okay, second round, yeah, he'll go second round. Third round, fourth round, now it's getting serious, right? And the difficult thing is Michael's seeing all these guys that he's played with or played against, and his stats were way better than them, and they're all getting drafted. Michael Bennett's name was not called. Oh my gosh, it was the most difficult thing. Somewhere during the draft, he decides to go fishing. He goes fishing with his dad. He's like, I just can't watch it no more. So he goes fishing. He gets upset going fishing. And he throws the poles and everything in the water.
That's one way to catch the fish. The fish can catch themselves. The fish was like, I know you're upset. We'll just get in here and we'll go home with you.
So frustrated. Oh my gosh. So I'm still sitting at home and I'm just like, okay, I'm just praying like, oh my gosh. Just for him. You know, I want him to be okay. If they're okay, whether you're drafted or not, or whether you play, I don't care what you're doing. As long as you're okay, I'm okay.
Yep. Right? Exactly.
So when he comes back from fishing, I'm still sitting inside and he walks in the door, you know, as if I could see it all over his face, Annie. And he just walks over to me. He literally gets in my lap. Now he's huge, you know, over 6 footer, 200 pounds. He sits in my lap and curls up in a fetal position and just break down and cry. Oh my gosh. It's like somebody just tore my heart out. And so we're just bawling. I'm crying. I'm holding this big 6 footer in my arms and Michael, it's okay. You know, what God has for you is for you, you know, stay strong, you know, just encouraging. That's all you can do. You know, it's so hard.
It doesn't matter how big they get. They're always our babies, all nearly 7 feet of them. Which leads me to another favorite moment of mine. And that's when Mama Bettis joined me on the show to talk about her son, NFL Hall of Fame Pittsburgh Steelers running back Jerome the Bus Bettis. Ooh, wee! Yes, that's what Mama Bettis says every time you'd say the name Mike Tomlin. Anyway, did she have some stories? And I love this one that she shared with me about discussing how she dealt with her concerns about Jerome playing football after he was diagnosed with asthma at age 14.
Jerome was born with asthma, but it went dormant when he was about a year and a half. About 18 months, it went dormant. So we never saw it again. So I figured it's just gone. But it came back when he started going through puberty. And I told the doctor, I said, well, he wants to play football. I said, but he has to take oxygen. Show you what I knew about the game. I said, he has to take oxygen. And the doctor said, well, if he has to take oxygen, then he doesn't need to play. But if he can use, he had inhalers. He said he can play with these inhalers. And he gave him an inhaler to put in before he started taking some puffs. And I guess a different one if you have a problem. So we had to learn how to use this. So I said, I lost the boat. My husband, Jerome, John, they all said, yeah. And I'm like, no, but I lost it. So he started practicing and he went to one school for a half a semester and he ended up coming back to school near our home. And I'm like, how can this be? This boy has asthma, how is he going to play? So I would go to the practice and I sit outside around the field, his high school. I would sit in my car and I would watch the practices and make sure everything was going good. And one day Jerome came to the car and he told me, he says, Mom, the coach wants you to come in. He said, he thinks you're a spy sitting here watching us, watching our practice, watching the plays.
Stealing signals.
He doesn't know who you are. And he said, you should come into the field. And I'm like, oh, okay. So from then on, I would go right, park my car right up near theirs and go inside in the field and sit on the bleachers. And I was there every day watching practice and everything. And then I started going to the games and it's like I'm sitting there with my inhaler in my hand waiting to pounce out there to use it, you know, or I give it to the coach. But I was always there, always. I said, where else would I be? This boy may have an asthma attack or something may happen. But God bless, he actually had one serious one later on. But we got through it, and I stayed there with those inhalers. And then by the time he got to college, he had the doctors there at college, and they took care of him. And so
you didn't have to pull up in college?
No.
You didn't have to pull up and park. It's just the image of Mama Bettis pulling up and ready to pounce with that inhaler that gets me every time. From Mama Bettis, we're going to sidestep over to Miss Gwen Jenkins, mother of two-time Super Bowl winning safety Malcolm Jenkins. Malcolm has had an incredible career so far. I mean, he's a vet, okay? And it's not over yet. But it's not always been an easy ride. I asked Gwen about how Malcolm felt when free agency came in 2014 and the New Orleans Saints didn't offer him a new contract after 5 years with the team. Hell, they didn't even call him.
Let me tell you.
Tell us.
You need to ask my mother on that because she's still pissed off. Because it's not so much, you know, you have the right, you know, as a business to, you know, change characters or whatever, players. But not to have a conversation. They didn't have a conversation with Malcolm. So free
that's very saint-y. That's very saints.
Yeah. It was like, you don't hear anything. And so literally a minute into free agency, the Eagles called Malcolm and he accepted. You know, it was like, okay, we're going this way. Didn't hear from the Saints.
No, but how did that make him feel? Because I think for me, that's the hardest part about this, because there's zero loyalty. And the players are treated as this disposable. Everybody's replaceable. And that's frustrating because you think you're building relationships. Even if you don't want me, communicate, be on the same page. So I'm sorry, but that's the hardest part.
That is. And he carried that for quite some time of the way that was handled, because it is about relationships. Everything's about relationships. And so you give your all, you know, 5 years, you're loyal to a team, and you, even when, you know, you're not feeling your best, you're putting it out there for the team, but then the team is, you know, doesn't reciprocate. So he was really upset about that for a while. But, you know, again, you know, it's not our plan. And it was, to me, reveal that that was the best plan, that he was removed from that situation, came into the Eagles. You know, they won a Super Bowl. They embraced him, the community. Once again, in that same way, in that same experience, some things you need to walk away from too. You know, sometimes it does. You don't understand it at the time when it's a break, but there's a reason for that.
Gwen is absolutely right. Sometimes you just got to walk away. And Malcolm went on to win the Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles. So sometimes, guess what? A loss can be your greatest win. Which brings me to my final clip and classic moment when Sandra Atkins joined me on the show. Sandra is mother to longtime Bengals defensive tackle Geno Atkins. Matter of fact, after 11 years with the Bengals, he was cut the day the episode aired. Now, Raising the Pro is not responsible for any player longevity in the league. I'm sure Geno's doing well and he's going to sign with another team. Anyway, Geno was drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals in the fourth round of the 2010 NFL draft. And before that, he played college football at Georgia. But why Georgia, you ask? What made University of Georgia the right school for Geno? Well, you'll never guess.
They could go to five places. And so we lived in Florida. Like I said, I'm at the bottom of Florida. So anywhere we go is far. To get out of the state of Florida, you got to drive 7 hours. That's just the way it is from where I am. So he went to Michigan. He visited Michigan. And there was, Michigan State. And then he did somewhere North Carolina State. He went to Auburn, Georgia. One more place. Where did he go? I don't even remember where he went, but the Hurricanes, which was in our backyard. And at the time, the Hurricanes were, you know, trying to come back. They had just hired an African-American coach, Randy Shannon. And I was like, I don't know. You know, I said, you decide where you're going. I said, pick the school where you would go if you're not playing football, because you may not be able to play football. And so he went to Georgia. He chose Georgia because they had the best dorms and the food was delicious. That's what he told me. said, really? He said, they're playing football everywhere. I got to sleep
they
good.
They cooking like this
I
everywhere.
I got to sleep good and I got to eat good. I said, okay then, Georgia it is. So there you have it. You know, those ladies in Georgia was cooking flank steak and rice and gravy and smothered. Everything was smothered. So, and they had just opened the new brand new dorms. That was like an apartment. He had never had a room. He has two sisters, so he always had his own room. So some of these other colleges had, you know, roommates, people next to you and whatever. In Georgia, the players had their own rooms. And, you know, they were in a two. He was in a 2-1 his freshman year. And so that was that appealed to him. And so it was the dorm because he had to eat good and sleep good. That was his criteria.
Oh, I love that story. I'm with you, Gino. Great food and a comfy bed. I mean, what else does a college kid or any big kid need in life, right? That's all I need. Food and a comfy bed. You know, I started doing sports media because I wanted to humanize the athletes. From my fight to get college football families travel stipend to the college football playoff games. So everything I've done in this space was to always humanize the athletes. And launching Raising a Pro was an opportunity for me to share our lessons, our journey, individually and collectively, as well as learn so much from the experiences of my guests and players themselves. It's never easy when a Black woman steps out to do anything in any space, especially in sports media. So I have definitely appreciated your support. So I just want to say once again, thank you to all my guests who have made this such a beautiful experience and a fun show. And of course, a big thank you to you all for listening and supporting and rating and reviewing and subscribing. It means a lot. Raising a Pro is part of the Audio Boom Originals Network. Thanks again, and I hope to see you soon. Bye, family.